Start your day with a positive affirmation and intention. Since 1924, Daily Word Magazine has offered inspiration and practical teachings through daily prayer messages to help people of all faiths. Your subscription includes 2 months of daily affirmations, articles, and spiritual poetry to keep you inspired and motivated. Check out the digital subscription package that includes the online magazine with audio, smartphone app, and daily email. Get your subscription today. Visit dailyword.com or unity.org.
Experience the difference. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
How to eat better, get healthy, and help animals. Welcome to Main Street Vegan with your host, Victoria Moran.
I like to open every episode with a story that's inspiring or compelling. But today, my guest's introduction is so inspiring and compelling that turns out to be the story. Renee King Sonnen is the president and founder of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary and its initiative, the Rancher Advocacy Program in Weldler, Texas. Back in 2009, she remarried her husband, Tommy Sonnen, a multi-generational cattle rancher, and moved to their former ranch in Angleton, Texas. It was there that she had started bottle feeding a baby calf named Rowdy Girl and fell in love with her and all the cows as a result, having no idea that her life was about to transform. After witnessing time and again baby cows going to the sale barn, she became extremely depressed. In October 2014, she went vegan. The ranch is now a sanctuary named for Rowdy Girl. This story has been translated into nearly a dozen languages. It's gone viral online, and the Rancher Advocacy Program was created to meet the need that farmers and ranchers can have as they start reaching out to Renee regarding their feelings about the animals they breed and sell. Hi, everybody. I'm Victoria Moran, host of the Main Street Vegan podcast and live radio show, if you happen to be listening live on Unity Online Radio. Golly, this is going to be fun. Renee was on several years ago, just a short segment, and today we have the luxurious hour to talk all about transformation and history and what it takes for somebody to be themselves and then evolve into themselves at a whole nother level. And nobody can talk about that like Renee King Sonnen. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Victoria. It's so, so good to spend time with you and share space. I'm so honored. Thank you.
Well, that goes both ways. You are just doing so much good out there. I love what you're doing with the ranchers. We'll get to that. But first, after starting with that story, which I could just see as a children's book, I mean, I could just see the pictures. So maybe that's another project. I know just what you need is another project. But tell us the story. Start from the beginning, because I know there's so much to you. You're a country singer. You're a yogi. You've just got so many parts and pieces, and they're all intriguing. So just give us your version of how you got from mild-mannered regular person to vegan powerhouse.
Oh, my. You know, how did it get started? Well, I guess if I had to say when it actually got started, I grew up in Texas. And I had a collection of leather boots. I was a traditional Texas girl, and I loved animals. a lot. I loved animals, never made the connections. But I fell in love with a guy that, you know, that didn't have a cattle ranch himself at the time. His family was a multi-generational cattle ranching background, you know, from the 1800s. And Tommy was a hunter, and he helped out a lot on, you know, on various ranches. And he had land that he leased to ranchers, you know. But we married, and then we divorced, and then remarried. And when, during the time we had been divorced and the time we remarried in 2010, I moved in 2009, he acquired a cattle ranch. He worked for Dow Chemical for 40 years, and he was going to pick up the ranching baton of his forefathers and become a cattle rancher like his grandpa, great-grandpa before him, and that's what he did, and I was very proud of that fact. You know, I thought, how cool is it to be married to a cattle rancher? How Texas is that? And, you know, what better thing can you be doing in the world, you know, except, you know, feeding the world? I mean, I really looked at it that way, you know, but in the background of the way I look at things, I was also a yogini, a serious yogini. I mean, I practiced yoga, but I never connected the real spirit of ahimsa with not eating any animal products at all whatsoever. None of my teachers ever taught us that was, you know, total abstinence. You know, we dabbled in it, but it wasn't a thing to be practiced your whole life. And so I married Tommy, and one thing led to the other. I didn't want to be involved in the cattle ranching business. I liked the way the cows looked out there in the pasture, and I enjoyed going out there and, you know, when I felt like it, doing yoga and meditation and Tai Chi and stuff like that out there in the pastures with the cows. But I didn't want to, you know, open gates, help with the hay, feed the, you know, I didn't want to do any feeding. I didn't want to get in all that. That wasn't my thing until Rowdy Girl showed me a different way. And Rowdy Girl is a cow. Because I wouldn't get involved in the business aspects of things, my husband had an ulterior motive. And he decided he was going to coerce me into the business by telling me that there was a couple of cows up the road, a couple of babies up the road that needed a mama. And he knew I had a soft spot for animals, especially little baby animals like that, and that I'd want to feed them, I'd want them. And he told me about them. He said, "Hey, Renee, you know, there's these two baby calves up the road. Why don't you, you know, buy these calves and bottle feed them, and, you know, and that could be like your buy-in to the cattle ranch." And so, anyway, I don't know why I said yes, but I wanted to go see those babies, and I did, and I could not stand it. I bought them, $300 a piece. Rowdy Girl was one of them, and I named the other one Bobo. And Bobo never got her colostrum, I reckon, because she died very young. She didn't last very long. She had all the cattle ranchers called failure to thrive disease, and she just never could get her strength, and she died from that lack of first milk from her mama. But Rowdy Girl must have got hers. She thrived, and I bottle fed her twice a day, every day, and she's my vegan advocate, Victoria. I mean, she's the one that showed me the sentience of all the animals out in the pastures. I mean, I didn't go vegan that day. Didn't even know I was going vegan. I didn't have any vegan friends. Never even thought about the word vegan. But that's what started my journey, was bottle feeding a baby calf named Rowdy Girl.
Wow. We hear a lot about the separation of the mothers and the babies in dairy farming. But the idea that those of us in cities who look into this get is that it's a lot better on ranches and that the mothers and the babies get to stay together. But from your story, it's sounding like that isn't always the case.
Well, it just depends. You know, a lot of what I was told was that the reason why they weren't together with their mother is that the mother, you know, was either there's a few things that could have happened. The mother could have sometimes reject them. The mother could have gotten sold. And, you know, but for whatever reason, these babies didn't have a mother. And it's not typical for a cattle rancher, like cow-calf operation, to pull the babies off of the mother. It isn't typical at all. You know, normally the babies stay with the mother for about 6 to 7 months before they're sold to auction. So, you know, this was a very non-typical situation. I didn't have the wherewithal to think, well, I wonder why they don't have a mother. But I remember Tommy saying that, you know, that the babies either were, you know, rejected by the mother or the mamas were sold off or you just never know. Who knows?
Right.
I don't know.
Well,
don't
in that case, it was meant to be because look at what has come after. So carry us on a little bit further. You fell in love with Ratty Girl. You're married to a cattle rancher. You're eating an omnivorous diet. And then...
Yeah, so, you know, the thing is, I lived the life of, you know, a cattle rancher. I would take care of the cows, you know, the babies, until Bobo died, and then it was just me and Rowdy Girl. And I spent a lot of time with her, you know, beyond just feeding her, because I started getting lost in a trance with her. She and I had a real connection, and I know now that, you know, I actually commune with cows, but I didn't know it then. All I know is that when I was feeding her, I would get impressions on my soul. It was like she was transmitting information to me, and it's so weird. It isn't like she talked to me like I'm talking to you. It was like I started feeling things I'd never felt before, you know. I started feeling, you know, really sad about the fact that I knew the babies that were with their mothers out there were going to go to sell barn. I started noticing all the nuances of the animals' identities, what made them unique. I'd never done any of that. I mean, I started listening to the way they sounded. I started watching who they hung out with. And I don't even know why I cared, but the reason all I know is that Rowdy Girl was communicating with me in a language that turned on something in me to pay attention. And I started paying attention and naming the cows. And it isn't like I just said, oh, there's Sally over there. It was as if the cows were telling me who they were, and I was just repeating it, you know, like, oh, you know, so you're White Spot, so you're, you know, you're Dominique, whatever. I mean, it was just like, so this is who you are. And anyway, that went on for 5 years. I mean, it took me 5 years to lose my mind, to go off the deep end. But Rowdy Girl was the catalyst, and there on out, the first time I witnessed the babies going to the cell barn, I didn't know that I was going to have such a horrible reaction. I literally cried for days, and I wasn't a vegan. I was feeling things I'd never felt. I heard the mamas crying in the pastures for their babies. I watched those babies get loaded onto a trailer, and I could see the betrayal in their eyes when they pulled out of the pasture and onto the highway. The grief-stricken moans, the tears that lasted for days. And my husband tuned it all out. He just would go in the house, watch the news, and I was a basket case. And I said to him, don't you hear all that? Does any of this affect you? I don't know. You know, this was early on. And he said, I said, I don't know how you could not hear that. He said, Renee, you got to, you know, this is what we do. You can't be acting like this. You know, he was trying to tell me, you know, this is, you know, the life of a cattle rancher. This is what we do. You know, you can't be naming the cows. You know, you can't get attached. I'm like, but how do you not? And anyway, one thing led to the other, and I began to make a real problem for him because I couldn't stop hanging out with the cows, and Rowdy Girl wouldn't stop talking to me. So it was a very interesting next few years because I started saying things to my husband that I don't even know where things came from. Like I'd say, why don't we eat our own cows? And, you know, I would just say things out of left field. And I don't even know why I would say it, except I really felt compelled to understand, you know, what the heck we were doing. I mean, why are we eating hamburgers and T-bones and all that from the grocery store, but we send these cows off slaughter? I didn't get it. And I don't even know why I cared, except I had a real close relationship with Rowdy Girl, and I think she, Rowdy Girl, was just waking me up to care, to notice, to ask questions.
And were you concerned at this time that Rowdy Girl was going to be next, that she was going to be sold?
No, he wouldn't have sold her.
Oh.
No, because at that point, I mean, I had made it real clear that he wouldn't take the Rowdy Girl anywhere. You know, I had made that very clear. And he wouldn't have done it. Tommy was always a very compassionate person. He loved them animals with everything in him. You know, he was just a cattle rancher. And there's a big misnomer in the vegan movement that, you know, cattle ranchers, you know, just don't like animals I mean, I understand it because when I went vegan, I was calling my husband a murderer. So I understand that that thought. But quite frankly, you know, cattle ranchers care deeply for animals, but they're in a matrix that they have to perform in a certain construct in order to do what they do.
Yes.
And in order to feel anything other than, you know, I mean, they feel compassion and love for the animal until it's time to send them to sell barn. And then it's like, okay, we got to do what we got to do. And to feel anything else, they would have to be in a different construct because then they can't make a living at it, you know?
Right.
You can't make a living at it, you know. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I just was wondering if you could explain to those of us who don't understand that business why some of these younger ones went for sale, some of the older ones went later. How was that determined?
Well, usually they're about 6 to 7 months when they go to sale. That's when they go to sale. The cows that have the babies are breeding stock, is what they're called.
Oh, okay.
And then you have bulls, you know, but you only usually have one bull. And, you know, and then so the only way that the older cows or bulls were ever sent to sale is if he was needing to call them for some reason because they were getting too old, they had serious health problems or something like that, then they would be sent to slaughter. But it's normally the babies, the young ones that got sent to sale.
Okay. It's so interesting to look at this from not my vegan vantage point, but from the vantage point of understanding it as a business. And then, of course, that helps to understand the people who are in it and to be able to communicate with them better, as you obviously do so powerfully and effectively through the Rancher Advocacy Program. So tell us a little about that.
Well, yeah. You know, the rancher advocacy program happened as a result of me not being able to send the babies to the cell barn anymore. You know, I mean, it might be hard to understand without folks knowing that we quit doing that. You know, we quit sending the cows to the cell barn, and not only I became vegan, but my husband. So I think I better make sure. Oops, hang on a minute, please. Sorry, there was a timer going off, but I didn't know it was on. Anyway, I think it's important to know that, you know, my husband, I went vegan October 31st, 2014. Halloween is always forever as a memory of mine that I'll never forget, and I always celebrate it for many reasons. And my husband went vegan May 2nd of 2015. It took several years for me to be unable to send them animals to the cell barn anymore and confront my husband and tell him that, you know, he couldn't do it anymore. I went vegan as a result of, you know, I had to choose. And the reason I'm going backwards a little bit, Victoria, because to talk about the Rancher Advocacy Program without telling this part of the story, people would miss it, you know.
Tell the story. We love the stories.
Yeah, especially people that don't know the story, so they would miss it completely. But when I started losing my mind to the point to where I really thought I was going to probably start drinking again, you know, I'm in recovery, and I could not stand myself. I couldn't stand who I had become in all of this. And I wasn't vegan yet, but I was miserable. I hated the business we were in. I had started watching slaughterhouse videos left and right, trying to understand the truth of our industry. I went deep into research of what it means to be a cattle rancher, because I just couldn't believe that I was involved in something like this. And as I did, I stumbled on not only many slaughterhouse videos that made me cry hours and hours and hours at a time every single day, driving my husband insane. He would turn up the news louder than me because he couldn't get away from my cries. And I stumbled on Melanie Joy, Dr. Melanie Joy's dissertation on carnism, where she talks about that family eating beef stew. And they come to the conclusion during that dinner that they're not eating a cow, they're eating a golden retriever. And whenever I heard that, that was on Halloween 2014. As soon as I heard that, something in me jolted, and I knew that something was real wrong, because it could have been anybody's body in that bowl. It could have been a golden retriever, a cat, a possum, a human. Who knows? It's chopped up dead bodies, you know? And so, that evening, we went to his mother's house. She was having a Halloween little get-together for the family, and, you know, the main course was beef stew. And the wind in the air was right that day. And all I know is as soon as that beef stew came out and she started to serve me up, I just said out loud, I cannot eat that. And she said very politely, well, why not, Renee? I said, because it's got floating dead hacked up animal bodies in it. I cannot. And I said it in front of the whole family. They were all talking, and they stopped talking, and they looked at me like I'd lost my mind. Like, what? You know? They wrinkled up their nose at me like, what? I said, well, it does. It's got floating dead bodies in it. I can't eat it. And my mother-in-law said, well, Renee, you can pick it out. And I said, no, ma'am. There's no more picking it out for me. And at that moment, I went totally into the matrix of veganism. I've not looked back. I made my husband his life a living hell, you know, until he went vegan in May. And, you know, and it was during that time period that, you know, I met a lot of vegans in the movement. That's when I didn't know any vegans. I knew no one. And I started just reaching out frantically, because my husband was going to end up selling the whole herd, even the big cows, even the bull calves, even the bulls, all of them. They were all going to slaughter, because we were just going to get out of the business, and the handwriting was on the wall. Tommy and I were getting a divorce. I mean, it was clear our marriage was not going to survive this. I mean, we never said the D word because we'd already been divorced once, and we thought nothing would shake our marriage. And here we were about to, you know, one more time end our marriage, and it was because I wasn't vegan. Who knew? And so, anyway, I started getting online, beseeching people to help me. I didn't know what I was doing. All I knew is if those cows were to slaughter, I would either, I don't know what would have happened to me, Victoria. You know, I might have started drinking again. I don't know if I could have stood it. You know, I at the end of the day, I chose the cows over my husband. Not because I was being mean, but because I couldn't. It would be like choosing to send, you know, a bunch of people to slaughter. The cows had become like people to me. The cat, there was no difference to me between a cow and a person. None. In fact, at that point in time, I think I revered cows higher than I did people. So that's what started it all. I confronted my husband a few days later and told him, you know, I got up the courage because I'd been meeting with some folks online, including Kip Anderson, that gave me a lot of courage to do a fundraiser to buy the cows. And I told Tommy one day out in the middle of the field, I said, hey, if you're going to send those cows up to the sell barn, why don't you just sell them to me? He said, sell them to you? What do you mean sell them to you? I said, well, what if I could buy them? What if I could? How much would you sell them to me for? He started laughing at me. And he said, oh, yeah, Renee, you know, right. And see, we were on the brink of divorce. He said, I'll sell them to you. I could get $35,000 to $40,000. I'll sell them to you for $30,000. And so I said, all right, and lease me the land for $1 a year. You got a deal.
Let's stop it there. We've got our break coming, and we are going to continue this story. Oh, my gosh. Renee King Sonnen, Rowdy Girl Sanctuary. Amazing.
We're glad you found us. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to Main Street Vegan with your host, Victoria Moran.
Everybody, happy morning, afternoon, or evening to you, whether you're driving in your car, or walking on the treadmill, or out with a wonderful, wonderful dog. I know that you are very much enjoying our time with Renee King Sonnen of Rowdy Girl Sanctuary. You can find the sanctuary at rowdygirlsanctuary.org. And also rowdygirlsanctuary.org on Facebook, Rowdy Girl Sanctuary on Instagram, and Rancher Advocacy Program on Instagram. But don't worry, you don't have to remember all that because we will put it on the show notes that go up every week alongside the version of the podcast that is over there at mainstreetvegan.net. And you can get all of Renee's URLs and find out some wonderful things that she's doing. And while you are over at mainstreetvegan.net, I cordially invite you to take a look at Main Street Vegan Academy. This is the place where you can have in-depth training. It used to be you had to come to New York City. You had to get yourself here and find a place to stay. Well, now we're on Zoom, and I'm not sure if we're going to be only on Zoom going forward, maybe half and half, but it's easy. And tuition is much lower because we're on Zoom, and we still have fabulous instructors, some of the best and the brightest in the vegan and plant-based world. And at the end of it, you are a certified vegan lifestyle coach and educator so that you can go out there in the world to help at an even higher level spread this lifestyle. And if you happen to have an entrepreneurial gene, then maybe you want to start a company like many of our graduates have. So we can look out into the world and see Riverdale cheese and Cat Mendenhall cowboy boots and Bon Ma ice cream in Mexico City, all companies that have come from people who attended Main Street Vegan Academy. So maybe you'll want to too. Now let's get back to this just enchanting, endearing, and wonderful conversation with one of my favorite people in the whole world, Renee Kingsonen. So you're telling us what happened, and I'm interested in your husband. He must love you like the Dickens.
Oh, he does. He just left. He was here and just walked out. He's outside fixing to go to the post office. I started to put him on the phone, but I thought, you know, he's on a mission.
So do you believe that when he went vegan and was willing to, you know, sell you the cows and all that, that was all the things we do for love? That was all about what he feels about you? Or do you think he was already starting to have that heart opening about the cows as well?
Oh no, it was all for the relationship. He had no heart opening for the cows. You know, it's not that he didn't love cows, like care about them, you know, but he didn't have the kind of, you know, your cattle ranchers are conditioned to not feel those kind of feelings for those animals. Mm-hmm. You can't do the business otherwise. There's no way you can do it. So, no, he wasn't having that. He didn't have that until after, much after he went plant-based, and then he started having the environmental understanding of things, and then Dr. Campbell turned him around, you know, for the food. That's what got him for the food. And then Kip on the environment. And then bit by bit, as he relaxed around the notion that he didn't have to take these animals to the sale barn anymore, he began to say things like, man, it feels so good to not have to take these cows to the sale barn. And I would watch him out of the corner of my eye when he would be out with the cows, loving on them, laying out in the pasture with them. You know, that man was so happy he never had to send those cows to slaughter again. And so now he's an ethical vegan. But, you know, it's still even hard for him sometimes to not have, you know, serious compassion for cattle ranchers because, you know, his great-grandpa and grandpa were all cattle ranchers, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we are for much of our lives and for many people for all of our lives, you know, what we came into. And I even wonder some about what we get genetically. Now on the health side, we're learning all this stuff about epigenetics and that we can actually do things so that our offspring can have better health. And I wonder if something like this mentality you're talking about, this we love the cows, but then we have to bring that line down because then all of a sudden it becomes business. You know, that's just so not only told to young people growing up in, you know, the FFA and the 4-H and all that, but I just wonder if there's even a genetic component. And bless his heart, you're Tommy. He's turned it all around. And you are trying to do this with other ranchers and farmers. So do they come to you? Do you go to them? Do you go to fairs and put up a little sign? You want to not raise animals anymore? How does it work?
Oh, no, they come to me. They come to me and, you know, it's a program of attraction, not promotion. You know, I don't really promote it because, you know, I have learned that if I'm out there promoting to cattle ranchers to change what they're doing, that's the last thing they're going to do. There's no real good models yet for them to transition to. That's what Rancher Advocacy Program is doing, is creating, you know, pathways so that we can have those models, you know. And we got two public service announcements that are coming out in a few days. Jane Velez Mitchell is, you know, on our board, and she's my partner on the RAP Summit, my co-host, which is, you know, a great, she's a force to be reckoned with. But anyway, she and I are producing, or executively producing, two PSAs that are going to be directed to, one, the farmer, and then, two, the plant-based industry. The farmer PSA is going to be all about, you know, telling the farmer, you know, hey, ain't it time, you know, to go from farming animals to plants. I mean, with all the plant-based food industries, companies booming right now, you know, why not, you know, jump on board and be part of a positive change, you know? So we got that PSA going out, and then we got another one to plant-based industry that's saying, hey, you know, you need fava beans, you need pineapple for leather, do you need mushrooms for some kind of packaging, do you need, you know, whatever it is, you know, peas for Beyond Meat, whatever it is. You know, why not partner with the farmer instead of sourcing your ingredients from overseas?
So what we are a great idea. Wow.
Narrative. Huh?
That's fantastic.
Yeah, we're setting up the narrative this way so that we'll get the phone to ring from both ends, because it doesn't even do any good to have a farmer want to transition if you don't have plant-based companies that want to transition with them, that want to be part of the journey. So we can tell these stories, and we have documentary filmmakers that are willing to do that. I mean, we have folks, you know, that would love to go on a journey watching farms transition. And so I'm really trying to streamline the process of getting farmers to plant-based companies. And then I'm also on the other side of it, working with, you know, advisors that have, you know, like investors, impact investors, green investors, you know, folks that really want to put money in these types of sustainable programs.
So I grew up in Missouri, and I was had some time on my hands last summer and decided I would Google my maiden name, which I stopped using in 1977. And I didn't know if anything from that kind of antiquity had made it onto the internet, but a few things had, and they were protests and vigils and animal things that I did back in the day. And I can remember, even that long ago, the farmers would always say, but I can't grow anything on my land. Is that a relevant argument? Is it one that you still get? And what's the answer?
Yeah, some farmers do say that, because the land is so eroded. The soil is so horrible from being packed down, you know, by hooves, you know, day in, day out, that nothing else will grow on it. Or because they live in a real rocky, you know, terrain. I mean, part of, you know, the process that the farmer and the plant-based industries will have to, you know, whoever they decide to partner with, they're going to have to decide, you know, what kind of, whether it be a crop, it could be a building. You don't have to necessarily grow in the ground. You know, in today's world, you can grow in buildings. I mean, these former chicken farms, you know, can take these big 20,000 square foot sheds and convert them into, you know, mushrooms, flowers, I mean, all kind of plants, you know, and greenhouses, you know, vertical farming. I mean, there's other ways to farm without putting plants in the dirt.
Wow. Now, do you ever find that it's one spouse that comes to you for the rancher advocacy help and the other spouse is a little bit like you and Tommy were in the beginning? One wants to change, one doesn't. We were talking about the farmer and rancher advocacy, and you had explained that, you know, things that can be grown indoors and stuff like that. So let me just start with, so if anybody is interested in the rancher advocacy work that you do, how would someone find you for that?
Well, if someone's interested in the rancher advocacy program, they can go to rancheradvocacy.org. And as soon as these two PSAs launch, you know, whether you're a farmer, a plant-based company, or a investor, you'll be able to fill out a form. And that form will come to me, and I'm going to kind of be a matchmaker. I'm going to be putting farms and companies together And then I'll be talking to some of my financial advisors on appropriate investment, opportunities that they could tie into. So that's the way the Rancher Advocacy Program is developing, because we have a real, healthy network source. And the main thing is just to get the ball rolling, to get folks together, and to tell these stories, and we don't have a lot of time, Victoria. So the plant-based food companies, the investors, and the farmers, are all going to be able to, come together, through the program, and it's time to tell their stories because we don't have a lot of time, I don't think, left on our planet.
Yes, it's very serious. And it's also very hopeful. And I love that you're working the way you are. As you're talking, I'm thinking about, we're so divided as a country and everybody doesn't understand everybody else and all that. But here you're really doing something that is just such a uniting force where you're reaching out to people who wouldn't ordinarily get along. You talked about recovery, that wonderful concept of we're like passengers in a great liner who ordinarily wouldn't mix. Well, you've got that going on with the vegans and the ranchers, and I absolutely love it. So I want to ask you something, Renee. I know you said earlier that you're a serious yoga practitioner, and it's interesting to me that at least the vegetarian part wasn't clearly communicated to you through all those years of yoga. So what do you think those of us who are involved in yoga and who are vegans can do in a respectful and non-threatening way to get this message out to other people who are studying this philosophy?
Well, I do a clubhouse room called Yoga is Vegan with Holly Scotus. Every single Saturday at 11 a.m. Central Time, that's exactly what we're doing. And so it's not that I wasn't taught about vegetarianism. It wasn't enforced as a way of life. It was like, this is what, you should try and do. It wasn't like, mandated. It was experimenting with these things, And I know today, because I have so many Indian friends, that being vegetarian, they think that's enough, and it isn't, And so we have to start stepping up the narrative, that it's time to go meatless every day. I launched a campaign. If you go on my Instagram, you can see it. It's called Meatless Every Day. Meatless Monday started 18 years ago, and it's not that it was a bad campaign, but it's time to do it every day now. Meatless Monday's had its run for 18 years, and if we just go Meatless Monday for the rest of time, we'll fall off the planet Earth. We won't have a planet. We got to go meatless every day. And so, it's been 18 years. I mean, Meatless Monday was in many, many countries, translated in many languages. And so if we can get that same type of narrative and reach with a Meatless Every Day campaign, then how great would that be? And I think that's what's missing in the yoga community, quite frankly, is the fact that we don't stress to students, to practitioners, that being vegan, that being an ethical vegan is what it's all about. I mean, just like cattle ranching, hundreds of years ago might have been okay from the sense of it wasn't destroying the planet like it is now. It still wasn't okay for the animals. Just like in the ancient scriptures, when they were using milk and ghee and all this, it might have been okay back then. But when you really consider the logic of taking milk from cows, what's really involved in taking the breast milk from another cow and the fact that their baby is deprived, when you really think about what's involved, you've got to know that that's not right. And so if Jesus himself was here, if Buddha was here right now, they would look at what we're doing to these animals and and want to, you know, I can't imagine what they think. You know, and so when people use religion as a way to defend their actions, I always say stuff like, well, do you really think if Jesus or Buddha or Krishna were here right now in our, you know, at a slaughterhouse, you know, at a veal yard where just thousands of cows, baby cows, calves are just stacked one on top of the other next to each other. Do you really think if they were in the chicken facility and they saw hundreds of thousands of chickens, you know, crammed together, that they would bless that? See, they wouldn't. No spiritual figure in any religion would bless the mess that we've created in the name of animal agriculture. No one. Maybe hundreds of thousands of years ago, it seemed innocent, but it sure isn't now. And the only way we're going to get out of this mess is to go meatless every day. We can't, you know, keep taking baby steps, because baby steps, quite frankly, just like milk, is for babies.
Mm. Well, amen to that. So your Instagram, is that a new Instagram handle, meatless every day?
No, it's a hashtag.
Hashtag meatless every day.
It's a Rowdy Girl Sanctuary campaign.
Okay. Cool. I love that. Well, I'm going to be hashtagging meatless every day all over everywhere. I'm doing a lot with Instagram these days, too, since I went for Pancha Karma in May, and I have been doing vegan Ayurveda very consistently. So I'm chronicling that on Instagram, and it's really fun to hear what people say and have some interaction there. So I'm Victoria Moran, author, if you're an Instagram person and want to be connected. So gosh, Renee, in just the 2.5 minutes that we have left, if you could tell the world anything, what would it be?
Gosh, you know, get out of your comfort zone and do this, you know, eat vegan for the right reasons today. I mean, it's just so important. And, you know, 2.5 minutes. So, yeah, I think I said what I wanted to say about the Meatless Every Day campaign. But, you know, I don't know what else to say other than that. I mean, I said it then. I would encourage people to, you know, follow the documentaries that we're in, share documentaries out to people. You know, I don't know what else to say. Really, I said it all in that Meatless Every Day bit.
You did. And it's so interesting to see what it takes. And we put so much out there about this. And then sometimes it just seems like the universe is helping. I mean, Rowdy Girl showed up in your life and look at what you've done. And so I just think, especially if we're committed vegans and we get discouraged and we feel like there's not enough time left, to just look at truly the miracle of Rowdy Girl. I think we can get this done.
Rowdy Girl herself, she's still with us. She still communicates to me. I'm writing the book. Jane Velez Mitchell is writing the book with me. And, you know, there's a lot in store for the Rowdy Girl story. It will be a legacy.
I am sure there is, and there is a lot in store for Renee King Sonnen too. So everybody check this amazing woman out, rowdygirlsanctuary.org. Everything will be in the show notes at mainstreetvegan.net. Thanks to you, Renee. Thanks to Unity Online Radio, and thanks to all my wonderful listeners. God bless you, seriously. And eat your veggies.
Thank you for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Start your day with a positive affirmation and intention. Since 1924, Daily Word Magazine has offered inspiration and practical teachings through daily prayer messages to help people of all faiths. Your subscription includes 2 months of daily affirmations, articles, and spiritual poetry to keep you inspired and motivated. Check out the digital subscription package that includes the online magazine with audio, smartphone app, and daily email. Get your subscription today. Visit dailyword.com or unity.org.